Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Before the break, I told you we're going to be talking about disability insurance, but I'm going to talk about it today with a special guest, maybe differently than you think I'm going to. Gregory Dell is an attorney, and he's on the line with me. Welcome, Greg. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, David?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the program. I think people may have expected me to talk about the need to buy disability insurance, which, of course, I advocate all the time in talking with business and other professionals, but you handle the other side of this, which is when the insurance company doesn't want to pay the disability claim.
Well, I'm a huge advocate of people buying it, but when it comes time to file a claim with these long-term disability policies, you really got to be prepared. And what we do is we help people at all stages, whether it's applications, claims handling, or denial.
Well, that's perfect. And just to give our listeners a quick some information to contact your company, your law firm. The website is real simple. It's DI, which stands for Disability Insurance, DIAttorney.com. And what's the best telephone number for them to call?
800-828-7583.
Very good. And so you, one of the things that people don't realize, and you can speak to this, Greg, I'm sure, and it's going to sound kind of funny to our listeners, but you know, you pay your premium, and then you expect that if something happens, be it somebody dies, somebody has a disability claim, your car breaks down, your house burns down, your house gets broken into, or whatever, that you expect the insurance company to pay, but that doesn't always happen, does it?
It absolutely doesn't. And I think a lot of people have become more and more accustomed to that, especially just dealing with health insurance. You know, tons of people submit claims, they think it's going to be paid, and it's not paid. But what it comes down to when dealing with disability insurance is that your policy is really a contract. And the contract has specific language in it saying that if you're unable to perform the duties of your occupation, or sometimes any occupation, and you can't do those things, then you should get paid. However, it's subject to tremendous interpretation by the insurance company, and the insurance company's in business to sell policies, doesn't necessarily love to pay premiums. They want to often do the right thing, but if there's a benefit of the doubt, they're usually going to give it to themselves and not the policyholder. So there's a lot of things that you can do to really be prepared and get paid. And while there may be some misconceptions that the insurance companies don't pay, the reality is that they actually pay more than 70% of the claims that they receive.
That's a pretty high statistic. I mean, because I know that there are folks, of course, and you know that you've dealt with this, I'm sure, as well. There are people out there who are not disabled trying to get benefits to which they really should not be entitled.
There definitely are those people out there, and I would say that you find a lot more of those people on the government-type claims.
I see.
The Social Security disability claim.
So that's not what we're talking about here. You're talking about private disability insurance where somebody's actually either through a group plan at work or through buying the policy individually, they've got that coverage that is through a private insurer.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, I imagine that, again, you've seen all types of things. You work, let's a little bit more about your firm. You have a team of how many attorneys is it?
Well, we have 15 attorneys.
Wow.
We have 7 attorneys who do nothing but long-term disability and short-term disability insurance claims on a nationwide basis.
So you're nationwide. You've dealt with all the different insurance companies, I'm sure, over the years.
We have handled claims against every major disability insurance company. There's more than 40 of them. Every now and then, a new one pops up. There's been a lot of consolidation, as you see in your business.
Sure.
As well. So we've litigated against almost all of them, represented claimants at every stage against every company, and they all have their own nuances.
Do you see certain companies that just are much more agreeable and easy to work with? Or I suppose there's some that you may never really deal with that much, and that might be an indication that they're really good with their claimants.
There are. What I see is I see experienced companies and I see inexperienced companies. You know, you can have a company that's still doing billions of dollars every year, but they only have a 5-person claims handling department. And then you can get a hold of a company like a Unum or a Prudential or a MetLife, and they have hundreds of employees handling their administration of long-term disability claims.
Wow.
And I tend to find that it's kind of a mixed bag. The bigger companies really know what they're doing because they're cut out to do it. The smaller companies kind of dig their heels in, and once they make a decision, they don't have enough people to bounce things off of, and the claimants get the short end of the stick in that scenario.
So maybe there could be a variety of experiences. Of course, your experiences having dealt with the insurance companies and their attorneys probably very often may not necessarily be indicative of how every company acts, but it sounds like, you know, in this case, sometimes bigger could be better, or a larger, more experienced company might be better at paying the claim ultimately for the person who needs to get the claim paid.
I think a bigger, more reputable company would be better.
Okay.
And it's the same thing with any kind of insurance you're going to buy. You know, you look at the background of the company, you look at the stability of the company, you look at the ratings of the company, you look at the reputation of the company, and that's really how you make your decision. The good companies, you're not going to find a lot of stuff out there about them, people saying bad things.
Okay. Well, that's exactly how I do it when I work with people to get disability insurance. Is those things you described, Greg, as, you know, reputation, how strong they are. I love looking at their financials because I'm a CPA also, but that's all very important stuff. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Gregory Dell is an attorney, specializes in disability insurance, claim process, litigation. We're going to come back from the break and talk a little bit more about kind of the step-by-step and what's involved here. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. We're joined today by Gregory Dell, disability insurance attorney. The website, really easy here, is DI, like in disability insurance, diattorney.com. And Greg, before the break, we're talking about some, you know, kind of the introduction here. And I know that you want to get into some of the specifics because, you know, with a lot of things, people hear about how things are handled or they have kind of a general idea. But walk us through from start to finish, I guess, if you will, or at least how things start out, what somebody should do first when they have a disability.
Okay, so I'm going to walk through the scenario where someone who really hasn't filed yet, they're in their work, they're suffering with some kind of medical condition, and they're working with it, because people can work with pain every day. It's just a question of how long can you deal with it. They know they have a policy, and now they're like, you know what, I can't do this every day. I need to file a claim on this policy.
Okay.
And when a person's in that scenario, which is very common, and we handle tons of applications for people, you need to have a plan. And there's key players in this plan. And the number one most important player is going to be your doctors. So let's just say someone has a back problem, which is one of the most common types of claims there are, and they have a desk job, a sedentary type job, and they can't sit every day and it's becoming difficult for them, or they can't move around the office, or they can't travel, whatever it may be. They need to be treating with the appropriate specialist. So whether that would be an orthopedic doctor, a chiropractor, although that's not my first choice for their primary treater, a neurosurgeon, a neurologist, an internal medicine doctor. They need to go. They need to be evaluated. They need to have x-rays of their back. They need to have MRIs of their back. They need to get some kind of physical therapy. They need to have a treatment protocol to show that if it's a chronic condition, meaning they didn't just get hit by a bus yesterday and then obviously they can't show up to work the next day,
right,
they
right.
need to show that I've tried to treat this problem, and I can't treat it, and I don't want to be on narcotics the rest of my life. I can't even function when I'm on narcotics, but I've tried to do everything I can, even if they go as far as to have epidurals or, you know, any kind of injections or things like that. So it's a very timely process in the sense that you have to go to the doctor. The other thing you got to do right away is you got to get a hold of your policy, whether it's through your employer or it's a policy that you bought from a private insurance agent. You got to understand what that policy language is. And you have to know what it means to be disabled, because it doesn't mean to be bedridden. It usually means that you can't do the duties of your occupation. And what that means is you can't do it with reasonable continuity, which means you have to be a reliable employee who's going to show up 40 hours a week, every day for 8 hours a day, and be relied upon that but for a vacation, you're going to be there the next day. And if you can't do that because of your medical condition, then that needs to be documented through your doctor.
That makes a lot of sense. So you need to take this, I'll put it this way, you need to make a good faith effort to get proper diagnosis and treatment. And then if that's obviously not successful or doesn't allow you to resume your normal duties and be able to be there and be a regular employee and do your job, then you need to get a hold of your policy. So then we do that, then what's the next step? They call the company and say, I need a claim form? Or
If they're going to do it on their own, they call HR or they call the company and say, you know, I want to file a claim. What's the process? Most of these policies, though, have an elimination period, and the majority of these claims are long-term disability claims which usually have either a 90-day or 180-day elimination period, which means that you have to be unable to work your occupation for at least 90 days or 180 before the policy is going to kick in.
Well, here's a question, and I think this is probably really key, is when do they, is it better for them to reach out to an attorney like you, Greg, and say, okay, here's what I'm dealing with? Because these, when we talk about, and you've kind of hit the point here, is that talk about long-term disability. You know, you have somebody in their 40s or even their 50s, that could be a lot of money over the course of the benefit period that goes to 65 or longer. So a lot of money's at stake. When's the best time to really get some proper legal guidance on this?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars for most of the claimants. The best time is the moment that you feel your medical condition is making it difficult for you to do your job. You know, don't wait and then call the attorney and say, I already called and filed with the carrier, but now I'm feeling a little uncomfortable because they're asking me 6 million questions and
right.
bothering my doctors. You know, you've already built your plan. What I usually say to my clients is we have to have a plan. We have to be prepared as to what you're going to do, who you're going to see, and when you're going to make that decision to stop working. Because the disability carrier is going to say, why did you choose this specific date? What was special about this date? I don't see any traumatic event. Why was it that date you couldn't work anymore?
Yeah, I'll say it maybe another little bit slightly different way is have a plan. What I would say to people is, you know what, this is high stakes, and at this point, the insurance company is not necessarily your friend. They're your friend when you're collecting your premium, but now it can be a little bit adversarial, and they ask questions that you may not know the answer to, and if you don't know, sometimes we volunteer information we shouldn't. You say the wrong thing. Doesn't mean you're not telling the truth, but we need to have some managed process to go through this to get the best outcome.
Right, and it's also difficult often selecting a date of disability. You know, something we talked about, we assume total disability, which means unable to do any work at all. But as you know, there's also provisions known as partial disability or residual disability,
right.
which means you're unable to do some. You're able to do some of your material duties, but not all of them, or you're only able to do them for a small percentage of the time. And many of these policies will pay you under what's known as a residual disability. And I often have people who call me where they've cut back their duties 6 months, a year ago before they call me. They're sustaining at least a 20% loss of income, which is what a residual policy requires. And now they're looking to file when they could have been eligible a year ago.
How about that? All right, we're going to take another short break. Gregory Dell is an attorney specializing in disability insurance. The website is diattorney.com. Stay right there and we'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
We're back with Gregory Dell. He's an attorney specializing in disability insurance. I've been to the website myself, Greg, and it's very straightforward. Actually, I applaud you. You got a lot of great videos on there, a lot of good information about cases you guys have handled, your services, how you guys get paid, all that stuff, diattorney.com. And the telephone number again for our listeners
is 1-800-828-7583.
Very good. And you know, you mentioned before the break about partial disability and things like that. Another area, of course, which I'm sure you have done plenty of legal representation for your clients, is in the area of what is called own occupation or any occupation. Talk a little bit about that for our listeners.
Sure. Own occupation, what you're talking about is how you define disability. And the policy language specifically defines what disability means. Own occupation generally means you're unable to perform the substantial or material duties of your occupation or the major duties of your occupation. That means your job. So in the simplest form, I often use the example of if you're a physician who does surgery, so if you're a surgeon and you hurt your wrist and you can no longer do surgery, but your duties, the majority of the duties of what you were doing before you became disabled were surgery, then as long as you can't perform any more surgery, you're going to be disabled under an own occupation policy. Now, the any occupation, if this same surgeon had an any occupation disability policy, and even though he hurt his wrist, he was still able to treat patients in the office and provide evaluations and send out for diagnostic testing, he would not qualify for disability because he would still be able to have an occupation.
I got you.
So the own occupation policy and definition of disability is the gold standard when it comes to disability policy.
So that's what somebody, if they really want, especially if they're in a specialty area like you mentioned surgeons, they really want to look for either with their existing policy or if they want to have it reevaluated, just have it double checked by somebody to make sure that it matches up and it's an own occ policy. And now there's some people that maybe they should not have, they should, and it's going to, of course, cost more to have that type of policy than the one that's any occupation, because obviously if it's own occ, then there's going to be a higher claim rate that the insurance company has to build into the premium. But some people may not need that, but this is something for people to be aware of, and that's something that probably very often has to be the subject of litigation.
Yeah, I mean, there's tremendous litigation over even establishing what is your own occupation. I can't tell you how many people I speak to don't realize that own occupation travels with you throughout your life. So if someone buys an individual disability policy, and at the time they bought it, they were a painter, for example, and then throughout their life, they don't get disabled or anything, and they change their career, and they go to law school and become an attorney. The fact that they bought that policy when they were a painter doesn't mean they're only covered from doing painting.
Oh, that's good.
If they get disabled when they're an attorney, at the time they become an attorney, they become disabled, their occupation is an attorney, not a painter. And I come into contact with people all the time who say, what do you mean? I bought my policy 15 years ago. It was supposed to cover me, for in my example, from being a painter. And I said, well, what are you doing now? And they say, well, I'm an attorney. I said, well, your policy only covers you from being an attorney, not a painter. So that's good in the sense that the policy travels with you, but there's so many people who think they're covered for one thing and don't really understand what they have.
That's very interesting, and I guess it would cut the other way, too, is if you're now a painter, you were an attorney, and you have that disability, then it's going to be looking at your inability to do the painting.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great thing that it travels with you. I think it should travel with you. And the other thing is, you know, what period of time do you look at when you're going to determine what your duties are? You know, and most of the time you're going to look at what were you doing during the 3 to 6 months right before you became disabled.
That's a very interesting area, Greg. And I guess one of the other things I wanted to make sure we got to was some of the things you've seen that really, like the big things you've seen mess people up and where they've really run afoul of, you know, really self-inflicted wounds with regard to their disability claim.
Yeah, the biggest areas are a couple things. Number one is dealing with a change of definition in the disability policy. When you go from an ONOC to an NEOC, that's always a big problem because definition's changing and someone thinks, hey, I can do any occupation, but I used to not be able to do my own occupation, so the disability carrier is going to look to kick them off of policy.
I see.
It's not necessarily true because you have to take into consideration the person's experience, education, and training. It's not just, hey, you can flip burgers, therefore you can do any occupation. It doesn't work like that. The biggest self-inflicted wound, though, comes from a claimant's been treating with a doctor 4 or 5 months, they go in, the doc says, how are you feeling? And they go, I'm feeling okay today. Well, what does okay mean when, if you take a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the worst and, you know, 1 being okay? You know, someone says, I'm feeling okay, that means they only had 2 hours of pain that day versus 6 hours of pain.
Well, again, this is part of that management process that, again, it's not being untruthful. It is just being careful and clear about your communication, not only with the insurance company, but what you're referring to now, Greg, is your medical records.
Oh, absolutely. The medical records, because the insurance company doesn't get the opportunity to get to know the claimant. They review the medical records. They send them out to someone else. The doctors are not necessarily writing the claimant's medical records on behalf of the insurance company. They're writing them just to treat the patient.
Right.
So if the patient goes in and says, I feel okay, what does okay mean? So we always review, constantly are reviewing the medical records of our claimants. And we encourage our claimants to say, hey, doc, can I see what you documented in my records? Because I had a client, for example, who had a 5-level cervical fusion in his neck. He goes back in a couple months later, and the neurosurgeon says, claimant feels okay. And when that case ended up getting litigated down the road, what the neurosurgeon really meant in terms of whether or not that claimant was okay, he meant that his neck is stable, that he's not subject to being paralyzed right now.
Yeah, that's a big difference between feeling like you can go out and, you know, play tackle football.
Yeah, or
I mean, really,
or he was a chiropractor, go out and adjust the patient, or
five discs that are five vertebrae fused together. I've got two fused together. I can only imagine five.
Yeah.
Wow. Very interesting stuff, Greg. I think that this is something that people really need to be paying attention to. Gregory Dell, attorney specializing in disability insurance, diattorney.com. And one more time with that telephone number, Greg.
It's 1-800-828-7583. And just one other thing I wanted to point out for any of the listeners out there, we always offer a free consultation, which means we'll always review a disability policy for free. We'll always take a look at a denial letter. We'll talk to you about a claim if you're on claim, and we don't charge anything for that. We can review something quickly and let you know your options.
Very good, Greg. We're going to take you up on that. Gregory Dell, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being on the program, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.